spirituality, consciousness, health, and mindset. Welcome to the Ascend Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Chris Hopper.
And I'm Dan Harrison. Together, we are all wisdom and knowledge seekers. Hey, what is up everyone? This week on the Ascend Podcast, we're joined by Jennifer Sedini. She is a conscious creative and a lifelong student of the occult and metaphysical realities, and she is also responsible for creating several different conscious online communities, evolveandascend.com and phenomenalisms.com, and she is pretty much involved in nearly every conscious project out there, and she is just putting out so much incredible thought-provoking work, and she is just an incredible all-around badass. So, the other day, Chris said an amazing thing to me. He said, our reality is like an ever-grown garden. Each day we see a beautiful bloom, which we are given from the flowers we grow. And we can never fully understand why we are so fascinated with this, but we are just so lost in its beauty. Such an amazing words that really sums up what this episode is about. And it's about really exploring the mind and the fascinating concept of why some people see this beautiful garden and other people can't. So we delve deep into the cosmic work of Jennifer Sedini, where we discuss cosmic networks and how they hold relevance to us, the power of the universal living mind, and we discuss in depth what thoughts are made of, and so much more. So stay tuned for this powerful, fun, and beautiful conversation. And just before we jump with this one, you can now support the podcast via our Patreon page. And if you don't know what Patreon is, Patreon supports the podcast directly, and you also get to receive some really cool rewards in the process. We have many different types of rewards set up for you guys, from monthly binaural beats and guided meditations, community Google Hangouts, and so much more. And Patreon is the best way to support what we're doing, and it will really help us push this and take this to the next level. And we've never bombarded you guys with stupid advertisements or products, so please just spare a few minutes and check out the different reward tiers we've set up for you guys, and support the podcast, and we'll love you forever. So anyway, without further ado, let's jump with this conversation. Enjoy.
The thread of connection is so much, like, it's super intricate, but it's like, it's always less than 6 degrees. You find out you know somebody that knows somebody else, and then somehow, like, it's pretty nutty.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a beautiful thing, though, about this, like, sort of doing podcasts and connecting with people in all these groups all over the world, because when you create these connections with people, that's them sort of, the boundaries sort of dissolve, and you start mixing with all these different people around the world, and you start seeing people that you wouldn't normally associate with and mix with, and that's beautiful about this community that's online.
Totally. I agree. I mean, that's been the most interesting thing for me with Evolve and Ascend too, is, you know, it's incredible because it's a worldwide community and it's so many diverse, different people. And I mean, to be honest, I didn't really know that much about Muslim culture ever, but I've connected with so many different, like, Muslim and Sufi community members, and it's helped me so much to learn, you know, because I would have never had an opportunity to really learn about their culture otherwise. And I mean, it's so inspiring just to be able to connect with all different walks of life and from all over the world.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Both of us have been really looking forward to having a conversation with you for a while now. And it's all, like I said before, it's always really good to connect with like-minded thinkers, because the more that I've been delving into your work, and obviously I've been looking at your work on Evolve and Ascend and things like that, but what I really like about you, Jennifer, is that you really are putting a lot of amazing, like, conscious, thought-provoking content forward for people to expand the mind.
Thank you.
And I absolutely love it. But and I was looking at I was telling you about before, wasn't it, Chris? The post, the seven hermetic principles.
Yes.
Yeah, but I was watching that last night, and honestly, it sent us down like a 3-hour rabbit hole. It's absolutely amazing.
That's what I like to hear.
Yeah. Did that them principles come from the Egyptians?
Well, see, You know, I guess the Kybalion is kind of a controversial text because certain Hermetic scholars say it's not actually a Hermetic text, like it's not regarded by Hermeticists as authentic to some degree, but I mean, the information there is so valuable. But I think it also stems from the work of like Thoth the Atlantean, which some believe is Hermes. So he's like a it's like just another one of his incarnations. So it's this combination of Greek and Egyptian philosophy molded into one thing. So, I mean, the authors of the Kybalion are called the Three Initiates. So it's not one person. They say the wisdom is imparted by the three initiates that got initiated into the ancient mysteries, which come from Hermeticism and ancient Egypt and Greek philosophy.
Wow, it's interesting. So, did the Egyptians actually like adopt that philosophy, or did they sort of just like how did they come about it? It's just really fascinating. I was really trying to delve deeper, but I couldn't find any more information about it.
Well, so he was an Egyptian, I guess deity, I guess you could say, and he was supposed to be kind of like the scribe or the keeper of wisdom. So a lot of these principles come from his teachings. And I don't know if it's exactly Egypt as a whole, but he is a big part of it, and he was a big part of Egyptian philosophy.
Yeah, I think it's really fascinating because when I was delving into them, I was doing a bit of research on them. I was actually thinking in my head, I was looking at the seven Hermetic principles, and I was actually thinking all them principles were all the way back, sort of in the like thousands of years ago. In modern day science, is actually only now starting to uncover sort of what these concepts, what these people were talking about years ago, and it's really fascinating.
Completely. I mean, I just think it's called the perennial philosophy because it's just timeless. And I think all of this information is kind of just encoded within our DNA because it is like the universal truth of all that is and all that exists. So I think it resurfaces through different articulations through the ages. But it is ironic that now science is finally catching up.
That's what I think is beautiful, though, because when I really, like, over the last few years, I've really been studying sort of the Egyptians and the Mayans and people like that, and what I really find fascinating about them, they were, so all them civilizations were sort of chasing the unknown, and they had this fascination with sort of trying to expand the mind to that next level, and I don't see that as much now in society I don't see that as much now in our society, but they sort of seem to have this understanding that was so important, and they need to build their whole culture around it, and I just think that's so fascinating.
Absolutely. It's like working from within outwards, but we're more outwards working from within, or you know, it's all backwards in our society now because it's so materialistic, and I mean the goal is what you can acquire, not really what you're inquiring about.
You know, I think
came up with that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, it was. I like it.
Off the cuff.
Well, that's our podcast, off the cuff. Jennifer, I think it's interesting when you said, like, when you were talking before about Egyptian and Greek philosophies, like, combining. And I think, because I found it quite interesting, like, how a lot of the Roman philosophers, like, despised the Greeks because they felt like they were a conquered nation. So they actually, like, threw out a lot of their philosophy and start to create their own. But I think right now, like, we're starting to eventually, through the connection of the internet, we're starting to kind of like lean towards like one philosophy, which is like overall like the general sense of all of us. And I think right now we're more connected than ever, and this is where how I think our philosophy is starting to develop into like one main philosophy that I think we're all preaching right now.
I was just going to say that as well, Jennifer, as well. I think as well what you said before as well, because what Chris said there, that sort of ties into like the seven Hermetic principles, because what they were talking about was basically just the like the universal law. That's what it basically is, and everyone sort of has this intuitive feeling of what's good and what's bad. And obviously, what the Egyptians might have done is, I'm not too familiar, I'm just making an assumption in my mind, but the Egyptians may have actually adopted them principles because the thing was so right, the thing was in front of them, so they didn't need to go like finding something else that wasn't like sort of in another direction, because them principles were actually on the right track, and they understood that them principles were actually good.
Because I mean, they're the principles of nature too. So it's like, if you want to understand the way the universe works or the way that life works, is like look to nature, because that's where you'll find the ultimate truths. And I think these principles help you kind of see the patterns within nature that trickle out to the greater reality.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I was watching the seven hermetic principles, I absolutely love it, because what I love about it is, just even just take an example, I know we're talking a lot about it, but what's very interesting is a video like that, and lots of other videos as well, they have so many like different dimensions to the video, so you can actually, so like I said before to you, it sent me on like a 3-hour rabbit hole. But the thing is, just one word in that video can actually sort of send you anywhere. And what I've been doing lately as well is, I've told Chris about this, but I've actually been sort of watching a video, like I was watching your video, and I try and embody myself in sort of one word that you say, and then I'll do a bit more research and try and uncover more like sort of information that's just behind that one word. Do you ever find yourself doing that?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, it's interesting what... For me, it's usually a visual that will send me down a rabbit hole, or, you know, that's kind of where I got involved in Ascend to Take Off, was like bridging the gap between like the art and the philosophy. So, I mean, for me, like in the videos and stuff, what kind of like inspires me or unlocks something is when I see this like visual articulation of an idea, and I'm like, wow, that makes sense. How can I look deeper into it? You know, and that's why I think I use a lot of like the different pop culture references that you don't really necessarily like realize are super esoteric, but are. But yeah, and it's interesting how one thing can kind of really inspire you or hit you in the right way to send you searching.
Yeah, I actually think as well, I was thinking about this. I said this to Chris before as well, but because we were having a little conversation before. But I said as well, I was actually thinking today when I was walking around, I was thinking that I had this thought in my head where I was thinking, you know, like sort of language and words. It seems to me that that could be like words itself could be like the sort of this neural network of, or like a fungus of connections. So if you think about it, a word isn't just a word. It actually has like information behind it and information in front of it. So, and that's why I actually think that just one word can send you in so many different directions. I think that's the beauty behind just one little word.
Mm-mm. I agree. I mean, it's... You've heard of cymatics, right? The study of the visual effects of sound.
Oh yeah, it's cool. We had Alexander Tanous on the podcast, and
oh wow, he's amazing.
I think you said last time you know him as well, don't you?
Yeah, he did a talk at my friend's festival in New York last year, and I did one of his meditations.
Yeah, he's such a cool person, and I was actually, we were, I've just said this about 10 times, but we were here, me and Chris before the...
we were having a conversation,
yeah,
yes.
Me and Chris before this as well, we're actually having a conversation saying that I really respect Alexander Tanous, because I think it takes a lot for a person to be so focused in one area, because it takes a lot as a person...
It is. Like, to achieve this type of mastery, like, I know you don't like using the word mastery, Dan, but like... If people like really go for this type of mastery, it creates like this person inside, which is much stronger because he's focused.
Yeah, I think it takes a lot for a person to be able to put all their energy into just one area. Because I'm someone who likes to delve into loads of different areas. So, like I said to you, I was listening to that your talk about cymatics, and I can be pulled over all over by certain areas. But I think sometimes when you're a specialist in a certain area, you can't always do that, because you've got to sort of like try and keep your mental capability for that sort of like that specialized area. And I really respect Alexander Tanous for that.
Totally. I respect anybody that can stay focused in one field. You know, for me, I don't know if it's a combination of ADD or just having like being a super creative mind, but I like exploring it all. So I could never just be enveloped in one particular field. But it's incredible to me for someone that can't, that kind of diligence and study.
Mm, yeah, I agree. I think it is fascinating when we actually do look at people who are actually very far ahead in their field, because they're the ones who really leave a legacy, because they go beyond their field, especially when they get really in depth and they get so far in that they even question what's right. And that's where I think what's covered now is amazing.
Totally.
But Jennifer, something what you were talking about before when you were talking about Alexander Tanous and the cymatic frequency, and when Dan mentioned about words there, and something that popped into my mind was just like words, when we say them, they emit this sound. So just like the sound, it emits a vibration. This frequency is inside of us, and this is the vibration that we need to keep on reaching on and connecting on. And I know you can understand this a lot more than a lot of other people, but how is this like vibration like truly affecting us?
Well, I mean, if everything is a vibration of sound, there are certain, I think I'm echoing. There are certain sound vibrations that I think hit something within us. It's like, you know, if you see in the cymatic experiments, I posted a video of a woman singing Mozart into a tonoscope, and her singing that music, the way that it affected the sand is that it was forming perfect geometry. So I think it's a combination of tone, but then there's also like an intention behind it. And I think that's why I wrote a blog about how words are ultimately like magic, you know, and language is the magical formula that kind of unlocks ideas. And I mean, that's why it's called spells, like casting a spell or spelling, because it's also like kind of merging both hemispheres of your brain, where it's like you have the logical side that wants to see the data, but then you have the intuitive side that also is like inspired. So it's like the combination of the sound of the word and the visual of the word, it does something to us, which is like so incredible. And especially, you know, being alive as a human being, just the power of being able to use language in such a way is mind blowing.
Yeah. It's beautiful when you were saying that there as well. Like, I got shivers all over my body when you said that. It was beautiful. But, It's really fascinating because have you seen the film, to tie what you said in there, have you seen the film, I think it's called What the Bleep You Know, What the Bleep Do We Know?
One.
Yeah, but in that they talk about, he was talking about, when Chris was talking about sort of vibrations of like, of speech and language and things like that, but they, in that documentary they talk about how there's sort of this sea of energy in them, talking about how we're all a part of this sea of energy, and he was talking about how we're sort of the analogy that they use is beautiful. They said that we're all these droplets in a big universal ocean and we're all connected, but they were talking about this sort of like a universal consciousness, and they were saying that we're all part of this one sort of universal consciousness or whatever you want to call it, really. But what's amazing in that is one of the scientists actually said something that stuck in my mind. He says, have you ever actually thought about what thoughts are made of? And that I was thinking about that concept in my head, and I was actually thinking like that concept of what thoughts actually look like. Some people will find that so hard to wrap their head around that concept, but I was actually thinking if you just open your mind to that fact and think about how we actually are all connected in this sort of invisible web of energy or whatever you want to call it, that all starts to make sense. And then if you actually bring that back to thoughts, you can also raise the question like, how do we then communicate? And it's obviously in a sea of energy through our feelings and emotions. And that ties into why people actually sort of feel vibrational pulls when you're sort of having a conversation with certain different types of people.
Totally. Totally. I completely agree.
But when I was talking about the powerful vibrations, though, what's interesting as well, when I was talking about sort of that all this energy around us is, we're sort of connected with everything. I heard someone say once in my head, I'm trying to think, pull the quote from my head now, but it was a beautiful quote, and he says that we're all sort of particles of source itself, like everything you do, like how you behave and how you think and feel, it has that frequency, and that's obviously what Chris was talking about before, the vibrations. But it's very interesting because when I was watching that video of the seven hermetic principles, but that was talking about the sort of, it's one of the categories, principle. It was called the principle of rhythm, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that really delves deep into how sort of vibrations affect how we think and feel. And when you were talking about Alexander Tanos as well before, Alexander Tanos's work also pulls into that category because he's not using thoughts as a sense. He's actually using music and showing how music can actually affect the body and mind. And I know you've seen that video as well, because I know you did a video on your YouTube channel about it called Cymatics.
Yes.
But That's demonstrating on a simpler form for like the average person, just to sort of get in their mind that what a vibration of a frequency can actually do to your body. Because the average person might be listening to this podcast and thinking, oh, like a word can't affect how I think and feel and what I do in my life. But if you actually just break it down to its simplest form and think, when someone listens to a piece of music, you can actually, anyone can understand that a piece of music can move you into one direction, and it can actually bend and shape your day into a different form, whatever you want to do.
Completely. I actually wrote a blog about that too. Marilyn Manson, as controversial as he is, he's actually got a very brilliant mind, and he had a quote saying how music is the ultimate magic, and it's so true. I mean, I'm a single girl, so I'm, you know, supporting myself through all my different projects. But in the summer, I bartend at a concert venue, and the venue's outside and it's beautiful. But it's incredible because, you know, every weekend I'd work a concert and every group of people was like this microcosm of what the music was projecting. And it's, there's no other medium that can cause somebody to move and act and speak and dress and interact a certain way just because of the music. It's incredible, you know, so it's almost like this like sociology experiment working in that environment because it's seeing it in action where it's like, you know, country music, rap music, rock music, pop, they're all this archetype that forms from the sound vibration, which is so fascinating.
Do you know, I think what else is amazing as well is like how music can actually form your own identity, really. And what I've been looking at when you just talking there, and I was actually just visualizing different concerts, say like a Marilyn Manson concert. People at a Marilyn Manson concert, they will all be like dressing in more black and more like more clothes to represent him. So he's actually a reflection of how they're feeling, their emotions, and if they want to like embrace that music and they become more embraced in that type of like mindset and the type of music, even the, in the words Marilyn says, he would be a real insight into the minds of all them individuals, just like even in the minds of say someone in a country and western, like they'd be more dressing up just like the AM actors, the AM singers as well. And I think it is that music does form this identity inside of us, but the question I want to know is why?
Well, I think that's just kind of unraveling those principles that govern the universe and why. So it's like you have vibration, you have rhythm, you know, it all trickles out and trickles through, but it's fascinating. I think the never-ending why is why we're all here in the first place.
Yeah, definitely. That's the biggest question. That's a question I keep asking every single day. But as well, something I wanted to touch on as well, because in your video as well, the seven hermetic principles, I know I've said it a lot, but it's just really fascinating. It's really on my mind. But you said in one of the lines, you said, I think it was in part one, I think it was, on your YouTube channel, but you said something along the lines that everything is like a universal living mind. That was one of the lines you said. In that line, like the everything is a universal living mind, that really stuck in my mind. And it was actually really ringing around my head for ages, because over the last year, did you see that... the picture of the universe, the brain, and the internet that was going around like Facebook and the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was actually taking that concept of what you said there and them words in my head the other day, and I was really fascinated by it, because I've been over the last couple of months, probably, I would say, I've been doing these like little thought experiments where, so I've like used the concept of the different pictures of the universe, the brain, and the internet, and I've been trying to like think about that concept and put that across to visualizing like objects, so like that's in my area, like in my physical area. So I'll sort of like imagine my mind zooming into a plant or an insect or a piece of fruit or a raindrop or whatever it is. But I really think that, and I know as well, I really feel it, that all them will be exactly the same, even though I haven't like physically done the scientific experiment myself. But I just know deep within that all them structures will be all be the same.
Totally. It's all fractal patterns, you know. It's the same thing when you look at the way a lightning bolt forms, or the way that rivers form from up above, or the way that the veins in our body are, you know, it's all this universal pattern of connectedness.
I was just gonna say that it's scary how you actually believe it, like how we actually believe that the more we're actually seeking it, the more it's actually coming together. I mean like even the from the creation of like rivers right now up to who we are now as a person, every single thing, every single living being, and we're all deeply connected right this moment. And like, that makes me wonder, is this actually going to take us to the next level of human being when we actually accept this?
I was just going to, Jennifer, just jump in there, but I was just going to say as well, because Chris raised a good point that I was actually already thinking in my mind, was what I think about when I was imagining, like visualizing all these like different segments of a plant and a piece of paper or whatever it is, and zooming in with my perception, that's perfect what Chris said there, because that ties into connectivity, because it seems to be that the fundamental characteristics of the universe is everyone being connected. And I think that's what the picture of the universe and the picture of the mind actually shows to people, that we are on this like larger cosmic scale, we're actually all connected.
Completely. And I mean, that's where you can also have the proof in technology. You know, technology is a manifestation of the universe moving through us. And you say that you see the way that the internet is formed. It's this universal global mind, and the way neural nets, or it's the same kind of fractal pattern. You know, it's like this technological brain that we've built, but it's the manifestation of what was once inside of ourselves, outside of ourselves, and it's connecting all of us to every single one of each other. So as much as people that are in technology or science disregard the woo, when you look at it from a different perception, I mean, it's pretty incredible. You know, it's this manifestation of the universe trying to connect itself to the other manifestations of itself.
Yeah, I loved how you said that. It was perfect. Because if you do think about it, I was actually thinking about this concept in my head there, but it literally layers up what you just said there. Because if you actually think, if we look at even if you, like, say if you were in a spaceship now and you looked at Earth from a perspective, the Earth looks like this big, like, sort of neural network that everyone's moving around the planet. And that's the sort of the same thing for the brain as well. You know, even, like, the layouts of human cities, or even like like I said before, the internet as well. But it seems to be that everything around us is connected, like the stars, planets, everything has this all this one universal mind, or one universal energy, whatever you want to call it. But it's very interesting to me, because all through my life, being able to understand that, it seems to be now it's getting more and more stronger. Have you found that over the years that sort of connectivity and understanding that sort of like universal law has got like stronger in your life?
Completely. I think 2012 was when I kind of had a radical switch on back to like this path, and from then to now, it just feels like time is moving so much faster, and the connections are so much quicker. You know, it's almost instantaneous. And I don't know if that's the result of just how fast technology is progressing, and how society and just the current climate of reality is. Or, you know, I don't know how I feel about the whole idea of singularity, but I mean, the way that time has been moving, it does feel like it's like we're just connecting that much faster.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, I think you hit the key when you said, when you were talking about movement there, because I think that is actually the key component that we're all actually seeing right now, is that just like if we are actually look at the mind and we try to understand the mind, I think the best way to look would be to look at the world. Because if you look at the world, it's just a constant moving being, even though it looks like it's standing still or just rotating very slightly, it's completely running at like thousands of miles an hour, and maybe even a lot more. I'm not too sure on the scientific aspect of it, but it's just like the mind. I mean, the mind's constantly running from one thought to another, and even though we might think, well, it's just standing still up there, but it's constantly moving. So the mind is just evidently just the world. It's just completely connected, and just every single being is the thought. Just, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Completely.
I like that. Sorry, Jennifer. But I like what Chris said there, because I was actually thinking in my head there, sort of ties back into what we were saying before about sort of like, but that's why. So Chris was saying sort of the mind, sort of the same as the planet, sort of thing, like reflection of the planet, sort of thing. Because that's really interesting, because it seems to me that would mean to me that our thoughts are so powerful, and that's why we need to sort of realize actually how powerful our thoughts are. And I'm not sure if you seen this, Jennifer, but there was a I was telling Chris about this before as well, actually. But
conversation.
Yeah. But have you seen the I think it was a Japanese I said he was Japanese, dude, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah, as Japanese, I think he's a Japanese scientist, and he was talking about he did an experiment actually about negative thoughts on water crystals. Have you seen that? Yes.
Dr. Emoto.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the one. But he was such a fascinating guy, because he was actually doing these like thought experiments where he had people using sort of like human speech or thought, and he was actually like sort of like projecting them onto the water droplets before they were frozen. And it's really interesting, because obviously people might sort of say, oh, that's just a load of crap or whatever, but what's very interesting, that actually sort of ties back into what I said before again about cymatics, and that sort of backs it up, what Alexander Tanis is doing, because them two worlds come together of how actual sound in there can actually affect like the water. And if you think about it, our bodies are actually made up of something like, was it 75% water?
Yeah.
So you've got to actually come from the understanding of what is actual thoughts and what is sound actually doing to the frequencies in our body. It's so fascinating.
Completely. And I, even beyond sound, a few months ago, I had the privilege of attending this conference. It was called, it was about the occult and psychoanalysis, which was really interesting. And it was held at this center in New York that was for psychoanalysts. There we go.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
So it was a panel of doctors that all work in that field, but have had somewhat magical experiences that science can't explain. And one of the doctors on the panel, actually, she doesn't talk about it so often publicly, but she did these experiments that were government experiments where they took people and they would have them think and try to get their thoughts to influence computers. And they, with their thoughts alone, could get the numbers on the computer screen to change. Wow. And it was interesting because the male and the female would form numbers in very different patterns. So the females would form the numbers in one particular type of pattern, and then the men would form it in another. But it was just a direct influence of thought, which is even more mind-blowing.
Yeah, Jennifer, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, I think the whole concept of sound, yes, it does intertwine with our bodies and it does actually create this effect. But the truth is, like, it's if these sounds are from a positive or a negative aspect, that's what's really going to influence our life, isn't it?
Totally.
So I was just wondering, Jennifer, as well, like, if, like, something I was actually thinking about is, imagine like a global focus with positive emotions. Can that actually happen? Or do we need the negative emotions as well to enhance or even give the perception of a positive emotion?
Well, there was experiments done, it's called the Maharishi effect, where it's the result of what happens when a group gets together and meditates.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you actually.
Yeah, so there has been a direct correlation between the focused consciousness and attention on a group environment. And they said, you know, through those experiments that crime rate went down overall. There was just this incredible perceptual shift in the area that happened. But I think the thing is, you know, the universe is chaotic, right? I think that the universe was born from chaos. It will always be chaos. And there is that balance of light and dark that will always exist. You know, and that's the paradox, you know, where there are people like us that want to focus on the light and what we can do to combat the darkness. But it, in some ways, the darkness needs to exist because it helps the light burn that much brighter. You know, and especially in the current climate of the world, you know, with like Trump being elected and everything else, it's just there's so much darkness and density. But what it's done is caused this revelation of where there was other darkness that maybe we weren't paying attention to because we were comfortable. So the light is being shown that much brighter on it and causing us to unite and get together in such a way that is even more powerful than the protests or anything in the 60s. So I think, you know, hating the darkness or wanting to discount it or maybe not look at it is a common problem within like a lot of like New Age thought. And I tend to look at the darkness as something that's almost like a teacher in and of itself, because it's always going to be there, you know, until we achieve this like singularity that may even wind up resulting in the same pattern kind of emerging over again. I think that the darkness serves a purpose in its own right.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. It's like the polarity of good and evil, and I think the way the human experience is set up, it's set up for that. So we can actually, when the bad situations do come up in life, the challenges, we can actually learn and grow from them. And it's really interesting, because if you do think about it, when a bad situation in life, it's always something amazing always grows from that. And it's obviously what you were saying there, and I thought it was beautiful. But I was going to ask you this, Jennifer. Do you think the energy in society right now is actually heading in the right direction? Like, I mean, is there actually a bad direction, or is it just another direction?
That's the thing. I don't know if there is necessarily a bad direction. I think there is. Mm-hmm. You know, wherever we're going is where we're supposed to be going, and I think there will be some type of revelation in and of itself from where we go. You know, it might feel bad, but I think through through that, good will be revealed. You know, one of my favorite quotes is this axiom that actually a lot of like Freemasons abide by, which is out of chaos comes order. And I think no matter which way it goes, there will be kind of like this chaotic period and then an organization phase, and then it'll happen again and again. It's just the nature of life.
I loved how you said chaos becomes order there, because I was actually thinking in my head there, have you heard the analogy of the, like, say if an alien comes to the planet and sees a woman having a baby for the first time, have you heard that analogy?
No, I haven't. That's new.
Yeah, basically what happens is, like, just like imagine just see an alien spaceship comes on the planet, and it just, let's just say it's gone, it landed on like Vegas Boulevard. It'd be like, what the hell's going on here?
It'd fit right in.
Yeah, it'd fit right. It would fit in. But so basically, just like say a woman was on the corner of like a street wherever, and she was going through the process of having a baby. The alien would actually think that that process was a bad thing, but it wouldn't actually understand that really, like, at the end of birth, it's a beautiful thing comes out at the end of it. And I think that's exactly what's happening right now on the planet, that we might be going through all this distress and might be electing idiots like Donald Trump and things like that, but at the end of it, something beautiful is going to be born from it.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. I look at Trump as this, like, cosmic joker. You know,
yeah.
He's like the sacred clown in a very bizarre way, where, you know, if he didn't come to the surface, I don't think these little pockets of darkness would have been revealed in such a way. You know, like, I can't hate him. I don't agree with him. I don't support him, but I can't hate him, because I think what he's causing the world to do is to look at themselves deeper. And to kind of like fight for something for the first time in a really long time, and to get uncomfortable. So I think, you know, they're out of the bad, there might be some good.
Do you think though, Jennifer, it's creating more diversion right now, and like we're actually becoming disconnected from this? Like some people are actually leaning towards it, some people are actually pushing further against it. Do you think it's creating more of a diversion with us?
In certain ways, yes. You know, a lot of, you know, if you want to go down the conspiracy rabbit hole, it's believed that the agenda is divide and conquer, you know, where it's a race war, but it's actually a class war. It's a war against genders, but it's really just so much, it's like type of like social programming in a way. And it gets really dark if the deeper you go, you know, and it's all there for things to be uncovered. It's just reading through a ton of information. But I think that we grow when we're stretched, and this division might ultimately wind up with a greater unification, you know? I mean, for a lot of people, I don't think many people realize how many like pockets of neo-Nazis there are, or pockets of racism, because we've been living in such a bubble, and the bubble bursts so we can look at it and fix that problem. So... you know, it might get worse before it gets better, but you can only fix a problem once you fully understand it.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I mean, it's scary is how actually divided we are, and even at ourselves, like a lot of people would look at us, Jennifer, and look at Dan and myself, and they'll see Dan doing yoga, they might see me meditating, and they might see you, Jennifer, doing your thing, and it will all be like classed as these type of like outsiders, and they'll be like, those three aren't in touch with the real world. They're not seeing what's really going on here. And this is what I think right now is the problem with spirituality, is that we're actually given like this image of being like completely different from the rest of society. And I think right now, if we had another couple of people in the room who were just wearing business suits and they had their briefcases and they looked more like in touch with this like real reality... I'm sorry, I'm quotations there. But it made me think as well, like, we are all connected right now. Like, me, Dan, you, Jennifer, and them two people in the with the briefcases in the suits.
Who was standing over there.
Yeah. And it makes me think as well, like, is our own identities, like, of spirituality, are they actually holding us back? Like, because people are actually seeing us as, like, these spiritual beings, and... should we not just like be focused on connecting as one?
Well, I think that circling back to the idea of language and how powerful language is and the way that words can form ideas, And I think transforming the language of spirituality is something that's really important right now, because people will automatically dismiss it as woo or have it fall into this new age pocket, which I don't really like the term new age. I think that there's a lot of weird energy around it. But I think it's learning to find the common ground, that thread of connectivity with the business suit people. So that's where the beauty of metaphor comes in, where you can explain a spiritual idea in a term that someone like that might be able to appreciate and apply to their life. You know, and looking at it, that spirituality isn't necessarily something that we identify with. It's who we are. You know, it's not choosing a label. It's not choosing anything. It's participating in evolution. And I think kind of just learning how to navigate the people that don't quite get it yet through a way that's gentle and not quite in your face, and leading by example, is really the way that we can kind of get around that.
I like that, Jennifer, because I was actually thinking in my head there, it's like the process of, say, if everyone on the planet starts like actually knowing thyself sort of and understanding themselves, the actual, like, the sort of you sort of transcend beyond the label, sort of like Chris was saying before, like all these different labels, whatever it is, like she's a vegan, he's a meat eater, whatever it is, all these different labels that are all over the place. When you actually start really understanding yourself as a human being, you transcend beyond all them different boundaries, you transcend beyond language, and you actually start getting a feel for what another human being actually is sort of trying to put across to you. And I think as well, when you actually become more sort of in tune with yourself, or a spiritual person, or whatever you want to call it, you start seeing past all them boundaries, and them boundaries just dissolve, and you actually understand that sort of the guy who's, like Chris said before, the guy who's in the business suit, or the guy who's working Costco, they actually may just be as spiritually aware as someone else who's actually meditating for 24 hours a day.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
And just acknowledging that their journey is going to be different than yours, because they have different karma and dharma that they're working through. So the thing is not to judge, and to appreciate, and to just, you know, kind of like nod your head and say, okay, you know, it's all right. You'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And also, I think the power of asking questions is so important. You know, instead of telling anybody it is what it is, or this is how it is, or this is going to make your life better, it's ask questions, because that inspires critical thinking. And that, I think, will, of anything, is what kind of will ignite something within somebody that's not quite as spiritual to begin with to maybe search.
Yeah, I agree,
Jennifer. That's how I've been able to navigate it, you know? And it's incredible, the power of a question.
Yeah, I think a lot of people actually just go with the flow sign of thing, and they forget to even just look at themselves in the mirror and actually look at the person who's actually staring back at them. Because I think that even just looking at yourself, that creates like the greatest question of all time, like, what am I doing? Or who am I?
Yeah.
That's where I found my greatest questions, actually, when I actually do look at myself in the mirror, and I see more in the person's eyes who's staring back at us than I do like anything else, to be honest.
Completely. They're the window to the soul.
I've actually been doing a process lately of when I'm driving in my car, I'll be like driving down the road, like on a busy road or a motorway. And I actually did this a couple of weeks ago, and I was driving down the road, and I was actually just, it always makes us, it, I don't know why, it's probably the situation, because it always reminds me of the of like little ants, you know, like sort of everyone like buzzing around the planet, sort of say. And I was actually trying to do this like sort of mental thing in my head, and I was like visualizing all these like sort of these people driving around on the planet so fast, and me being one of them as well. So I'm not like being negative towards anyone else, I'm actually being negative towards myself as well, understand that I'm sort of also an ant as well. But I was actually just questioning myself, like, I don't know if you've ever done this, Jennifer, but when you just driving or walking down the street, and you just like say to yourself, like, what the hell are we doing? Like, what the hell are all we doing, just buzzing around the planet all over? Like, what is our real purpose? I keep asking myself that all the time. And yeah. I don't know if you do.
Yeah, it's like we're so busy, but where are we going? Yeah. You know, what is the rush? I have the same feelings too. I mean, because I think so much. I mean, I'm a thinker, so I'm always constantly like watching. I always say I'm kind of like an observing participant. And it's funny, you know, it's funny to like step outside and just observe humanity and how we interact and act and move. I mean, we are just like these busy little things, and it's funny. I just don't know. I agree.
Jennifer, something I want to ask you actually. What do you think would like happen if, like, say, if I know obviously there's a shift now in humanity, sort of, say, more people are obviously asking the questions, like you said before. It was a beautiful way you said it, more people asking questions. But what would you think would happen, say, if another 50% of people actually start asking real questions about sort of the nature of reality and actually like who they ask, trying to find out who they are themselves? What do you think would actually happen if that situation happened?
I think time would probably move even faster, so much so that it might be like into hyperdrive. Yeah. I think the universe and the earth is intelligent in the way that it evolves itself. And I think that's why it's like started in these little ripples to ripple out, because if it happened that fast, I don't think we'd be able to handle it. You know, I think it might be a bit overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, like, the possibilities of actually when all of us embrace spirituality and really understand the concepts behind it, that is when we will actually evolve ourselves. Because you, like you said there, Jennifer, time will elapse so quickly when we do all embrace this. And what happens when time runs fast? We evolve. I mean, it took us millions of years to get where we are now. But when sometimes I actually think, like, if we all embrace spirituality, how long is this going to take before we actually evolve to the next self? Is it going to take another million years of us like this, or is it just going to be like a blip of a mind?
I think, like I said, I think it's going to move faster. I think the reason also why it hasn't been this big shift is because there's a lot of still learning that we all need to do. Daniel Pinchbeck is an author friend of mine, and he talks a lot about the concept of initiation, where it's something is an initiation into understanding, where, you know, it's like the first time you step out into the cold, that's an initiation into understanding what cold is. And as soon as you start asking questions about spirituality, you kind of are given the tests to understand and unpack what spirituality really means. And I think right now it's still very premature, because there's a lot of material spiritualism, you know, it's not to like discount anybody's work, but there's a lot of like snake oil salesmen out there that are using spirituality as a tool just for financial gain, yeah. which is important to make a living in this society, but I'm not so sure some of the intentions are aligned. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of that is still being worked out, because, you know, if it doesn't get worked out, I think the same patterns will emerge where ego will bubble up again and it'll become like Lord of the Flies in a spiritual sense.
Yeah, I think what you were leading on to there, Jennifer, is that like spirituality, like one of the first steps is spirituality gives you, other than like the perspective of yourself, but is the awareness of your environment. And you actually start, like, when you embrace spirituality, these like con men and like snake oil salesmen, they actually get found out quite quickly, because the awareness of the individual knows beyond them. And knows thyself a lot more than they know thyself. I mean, they're focused on the extrinsic goal of achieving money, sort of a say, instead of like the spiritual being will be more likely to look intrinsic for the intrinsic factors of knowing thyself. And once you actually know that this person's got a deal on for $9.99 for an enlightenment course, then
yeah,
maybe it's going beyond
way.
That now. Maybe then that's how you do find it.
Lifelong journey, you know, and I think we live in a society that wants the quick fix, you know, that it's like, okay, I need it yesterday. What can I buy for $9.99 that will unlock all of my chakras and give me enlightenment? It's like, it doesn't work that way. You know, it's a lifelong journey of coming to understand yourself and the way of the world and the way of the world in relation to the universe and nature. You know, it's a continued asking of why. And that's something that a lot of people don't realize. And I think that comes from, you know, the growing pains of living in the society that we live in, just kind of searching for the quick fix or the quick answer. I mean, I saw there's just like this online scam going on about like, join the Illuminati. If you buy the talisman, you'll be a member of the Illuminati. And it's like, you know, I have a different perspective on what the Illuminati really is, and I don't necessarily think it's this like global cabal. I think that these traditions go back so, so far, and it's almost like they had to stay secret because the preservation of that type of light was so sacred that if it wasn't kept secret or kept within these little pockets, that I don't think humanity could be ready for it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's like a prime example of those ideas being exploited for a necklace, and it doesn't make you a member of the Illuminati.
I think, Jennifer, it's like this road that we're on right now. It's like I think all of us have come to the agreement that it's certainly not a road to actually that take. It's certainly not a road to take for granted, because there is so many speed bumps and like an awareness. I mean, like, because you have full control of like how you see the world now. It's so much more painful if you go off track, because you know how much it's truly affecting you. Whereas someone who's unaware, and they're staying in the dark, who doesn't know what the effects are they're putting in the body, they're not as seeing the vibrational aspects of it. They're not like feeling all the negative energy that we would associate with it. So I think, in a sense, it is so much more easier to stay unaware of these things, but. Eventually, I think we all need to hit this direction. We all need to become like independent of who we are and what we're doing to ourselves.
Completely. And it really is like we're living in the matrix. I know it's like a tired analogy, but it is the best analogy, because it also stems from Plato's allegory of the cave, where it's like, if this is all you know, then that's what you're comfortable with. But as soon as you step into the light, it's like you can never go back again. But it is uncomfortable to give up the creature comforts of materialism and what's easy, you know, because this journey isn't very easy. Because like you said, it was like, now you feel on such a greater level. Now you see with such a bigger perspective. Now you hear with a different type of like media literacy that a lot of people don't understand, and, you know, may look at you like you're crazy when you say like this, the news is just this insane psychological operation. But I mean, that's why I think that it's been evolving the way it has, because I mean it's a lot.
Yeah, I liked how you said that, because it that's so true on the journey. Is when you start waking up on the journey, so to say. I mean, I don't know if waking up's the right word, but it's just a word that sort of everyone can recognize with. But it's when you do start sort of peeling off them layers, you cut off the onion, you can't put the layers back on, and you start going so far down the rabbit hole. It's sort of there's no going back, like what you said, sort of say. But what I find so good about it is actually, like, we might have these bad days where you sort of because in a way you do, when you are seeking truth and things like that, when you're in certain environments, other people around you and family members aren't sort of on the same frequency as you. So when you're bringing certain new concepts to their mind, they try to make you feel like you're sort of what's the word? Try to make you feel I can't think of the word. Sort of make you just feel like try to single you out because they're not disconnected. They just sort of single you out in a way. And but what I love about it is when you do start waking up and you start seeking on the journey, even when you have them bad days where you start thinking, is this worth it? Or like, is it worth trying to like bring a new concept to my friend, even though they're sort of laughing at us? It's amazing, because when you actually do take like step back, and when you go to bed at night time, you actually, like, I do this all the time. You sit in bed, and even on the worst days, you still turn around and just think, this is amazing. This is absolutely amazing. And I'm so glad that I started seeking truth, and I'm so glad I started actually seeking alternative information. And when you're lying in bed, it's just such a good feeling. I have this all the time. You're just lying in bed and you're just like, yes, I'm on some journey. Yes, it's amazing. It just gives you such a purpose.
Completely. I love it. I feel the same exact way. And you said it so perfectly, because it's like, it's holding on to that childlike awe and wonder at the world. You know, it's like, you know, the little annoying kid that's like, why?
Yeah.
I'm that as an adult. And I think that so many adults lose touch with that sense of wonder and awe and question. So it's an incredible thing to be able to hold on to that and live in that space. You know, I wrote this blog a while back, you know, which is definitely, you know, my perspective has shifted even more so, but it was about like the five steps of awakening, and how in the beginning it's like the alarm clock phase, where it's just like anybody that you run into, you want to tell, oh my God, reality is like so much bigger than we realize. Like, things are crazy. How do you not see this? And then all of a sudden you step back and start going inward and realize, like, okay, nobody likes being told what to do or how to do it. Don't be frustrated, just kind of integrate and live it, and then people will come to it. Because it's funny, in the beginning when I started waking up again, you know, that word, but I would try to talk to my mom about it. And my mom is, you know, she's an interesting character. She's like a sweetheart, which is like super hyper and just like wrapped up in her own world. And I would just visually show her on my phone, like, look, this is our eye. This is the universe. This is our brain. This is the cells in our body. Like, we are all connected. And she was like, I'm scared. I don't want to see this. And I would get frustrated. I'm like, why is this scary? This is amazing. And then I just stopped. And little by little, I just became and integrated and like just learned not to judge, because like I said, everybody's on their own journey and everybody's on their own path. And it's overwhelming for some people. And I think that's something that we have to like not discount, that some people, you know, I feel lucky not having grown up around religion and having a really radical grandmother that studied the occult and, you know, being in a kind of a family of like free thinkers. But I can't imagine having to deprogram years of Catholicism or Christianity or any radical religion. So, I mean, I understand why it might be a harder pill for some people to swallow and why they might look at us like we're charlatans, or, you know, I constantly am getting accused of being satanic or in the Illuminati. I wish I was in the Illuminati, maybe, but not.
That
not
was going to be my next question, actually. Are you in the Illuminati, Jennifer?
But you know, it's all good. It's all an interesting journey, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I just wanted to say something as well, because you said it beautifully there about what you saw when you said to telling your mom, just look at this. But actually, a quote comes to my mind there, and I've said it before on the podcast, but it just comes to mind. I'll probably butcher this here, but the quote said, your job is not to drag your feet kicking and screaming, it's to simply do the work secretly and silently, and those with eyes to see and those with ears to hear will eventually hear. And I think that's beautiful, because that sums up the journey of sort of what you were saying there. You can't just go around sort of dragging your heels and saying, oh, look at this. You start understanding. I mean, initially you're going to do that, but eventually later on down the journey, you understand that you are going to be there. If you embody who you really want to be, others around you will see that. And I just wanted to bring the podcast to an end.
I love it. And that's beautiful. And whoever made that quote, I mean, it's just another kind of articulation of that perennial philosophy. You know, Thoth, bringing it back just to wrap it up. In the book, The Emerald Tablet, he talks about how if the light is within you, the light within the words will shine and it'll help you become illuminated. I mean, he didn't say that part, but I mean, that's kind of like the idea about it, is if it's within you, you'll be able to see. And if you're the one who's able to see, you can ripple it out. And, you know, I think that's why we're all finding each other, to be those ripples of light through the darkness.
That's an absolutely beautiful way to end the podcast. And I just want to say as well, just before we wrap up as well, I'm just going to say it to the audience. For $4.99, you can join our new cult, the Illuminati.
Vast riches beyond your wildest dreams.
You want to ask one?
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jennifer. It's absolutely been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. We had such a fun conversation. You can obviously probably tell in our voices as well.
Thank you so much.
I'm smiling through the microphone. You guys are lovely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. This was such a refreshing and fun conversation with Jennifer. And please go to her website, jennifersedini.com, and check out all her amazing work. And also check out her website, evolveandascend.com, which basically is just a conscious library of amazing articles. So please go and check that out. And we're just so excited to share with you the future podcasts that are in store and coming up in the coming weeks on this. And we have some very interesting guests lined up and coming on the podcast over the next few months. And we're really going to be hitting hard and pinpointing in on some very interesting topics. Everything from out-of-body experiences to the pineal gland and so much more. And we're just so excited and we cannot wait to explore all these different topics in depth and science and shine some more light into the mysteries and the things that are all going on around us that we don't know what the hell it is. So just before you do carry on with your day, please check out our cool rewards over at our Patreon page, and in the process support the podcast. So anyway, we'll catch you next week in the next one. Peace.